minutes ago. I'm looking real good in my passport photo. Amateur Traveler, episode 778. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about creeks and crocodiles, vertical waterfalls and a horizontal one, billabongs, and the bungle bungles, as we go to the Kimberley in Western Australia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Western Australia. I'd like to welcome back to the show James Schomburg from Adelaide, as you may recall, since we just did an episode on Adelaide, who's come to talk to us about Western Australia. James, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Really looking forward to this. It was a holiday my wife and I were lucky to do in July when the borders were open in Western Australia, and it's a magical place.
Well, and I should just say for the listeners, we normally don't bring people back like a month after they've been on. I used to have a 6-month rule, but James nailed that episode so well that I really was looking forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
So we're talking about Western Australia, and I think to put it on the map, we're talking about the western part of Australia. Is there anything more complicated we want to talk about than that?
No, except the area I'm specifically going to talk about is the Kimberley. That's the region. That's its name. It's called the Kimberley. And it's in the... So Western Australia is obviously west. It's the largest state in Australia. And in the north part of Western Australia, abutting Northern Territory, is the Kimberley. And the Kimberley is a massive area. I did some research. It encompasses about 420,000 square kilometres. So it's roughly three times the size of the United Kingdom and about the same size as California. Just this one little area on a map. If you looked on the map, you wouldn't believe it's that big. It makes you realise how big Western Australia and Australia are. And despite it being the size of California, there's only about 36,000 residents. And a lot of those live in very small townships, which are indigenous, which you can't access. There's one major city. We call it a city. It's only 14,000 people at Broome, which is... sort of promotes itself as a tropical paradise, and it is a beautiful place, and it's really the place, if you're going to be flying in, you'd fly into Perth, which is at the bottom of Western Australia in the south, and then it's about a 3.5-hour flight to Broome, which is in the start at the bottom of the Kimberley, and Broome is certainly the city, if we call it the city, like I said, 14,000. Just one thing I'll say before I talk about anything more is you have to be very selective when you go to the Kimberley. It's tropical. It's above the Tropic of Capricorn, and it is an interesting mix. It looks like a cross between Queensland's rainforests and the deserts of South Australia and Northern Territory. So it's a really interesting mix. And where there's water, there's rainforest. Where there's no water, no creeks, no rivers, it can be as barren as any desert you'll ever see. So it makes for spectacular scenery. But there's a reason there's so many big rivers there. We went on a road that I'll talk about called the Gibb River Crossing, a Gibb River Road, which is a very famous or infamous road. And I'll talk about that at length, but we did 80 river crossings, thankfully, on a very good four-wheel drive. It's an area that's very isolated, not to be taken lightly. If you are a four-wheel driver, you need to know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you're better off going on a tour with large four-wheel drive trucks. Because those river crossings can be quite dangerous, can be very deep, and the roads themselves are amazingly shocking, but it adds to the attraction at the same time. And the other thing I'll say is time of the year is critical because it is a tropical climate and there is the wet season, the monsoon. Really, the window is between May and September, so our winter. Being tropical, their winters, that time of year, it's about, I think when we were up there in July, I think the coolest day was 25 degrees Celsius, up to about 35 degrees. So I'm not sure what that is in Fahrenheit. I'm never great on Fahrenheit. Are you able to help Chris with that?
35 Celsius is 95 Fahrenheit. So right. Warm.
Yeah, it is. But beautiful temperatures, for particularly what I'll be talking about, a lot of what you do up there is ocean-based and waterfalls. There are many waterfalls that I'll be talking about, which are just fantastic to swim in, large rock pools under the waterfalls, and it adds to a lot of fun. as long as you avoid the crocodiles, which I'll be talking about as well. I've never seen as many crocodiles in my life as I've seen in the Kimberley. They are everywhere.
Excellent. So we started in Broome.
So you'll fly into Broome, and Broome is definitely worth at least a day or two to stay. It's a city right on the beach. It's well known for partially its history. So it was originally came to being because of its pearl lugging. It's very famous as a pearl area, and you can still go to the, they have many shops there where you can buy pearls direct from the pearl farms.
Okay.
As my wife did. And the pearls are beautiful and very well priced up there. But it also has got a really interesting history. It was one of the few places in Australia that was attacked by the Japanese in World War II. It was bombed, and in fact, quite a few people died. Well over 100 people were killed in the bombings, which for a city of only, it then would have been, I imagine, nowhere near 14,000, was quite a significant amount. And you can still see at low tide some of the ship boats that land on the ocean, lost on that tape. But the Catalinas, they're called, the boats that we use to transport soldiers. Mm-hmm. And they basically, you can still see them where they were destroyed by the Japanese, where they were moored. You can see them at low tide, and you can actually walk out to see the damaged ships, boats, I'll get it right, planes. And it's a fantastic thing to look at. The other thing that Broome's really well known for is Cable Beach. Cable Beach is one of the most beautiful beaches I've ever seen. You can drive down to it. As long as you make sure you time the tides. The Kimberley is famous or infamous for its tides. They are extremely strong tides. You follow the locals. If you're going to drive your car, if you're going to hire a car and you drive your car down to the beach, just follow the locals. Go where the locals are, because they will know the tides and they'll know that you're not going to get caught. As many times people have told me up there, tourists have gone down, taken their cars in there, and they've actually been caught in the ocean by not getting back quick enough. The tidal change is massive. But Cable Beach is a spectacular, massive beach. It would probably run for about 5-10 kilometres. Very long sand, beautiful water. When we were there, we were looking out, we could see humpback whales in the water. Beautiful places to go and watch the sunsets. The sunsets there are some of the best sunsets you could ever see. One of the favourite things we would do when we would stay there, we stayed there for quite a few days, was actually go to the surf club, which was on the top of the sand dunes, had really good cheap beers, had really good food trucks, which was very well priced, and would just sit and watch the sunset on the lawn there overlooking the beach while the sun was setting. The other thing you can do if you're a bit thinner than I am is go on a camel. It's one of those things to do, go on a camel group on a camel ride along the beach, and you'll see a lot of photos of Broome with the camels in the sunset. Right. It's one of those classic scenes. Unfortunately, you've got to be under 90 kilograms, which I don't think I've been since I was about 13. I'm not sure how many pounds that is, but it's...
it's about 200.
200. My wife, I said, you can go on, but she said no. She took a hit for me and said, we'll just walk it. But it is a beautiful place to go. The other couple of things that I'd say before you leave Broome, there's a fantastic tour we did. We went out to the mangroves. One side of the Broome is actually very unprotected, where Cable Beach is. The other side are mangroves rather than real beaches. And we took a tour out through the mangroves, which in themselves, with the colour of the water there, is this bright green. It's azure. It's stunning, the water in Broome. And you go through the mangroves, and then you come to these really rocky beaches. And these rocky beaches have footprints, some of the largest collection of dinosaur footprints on Earth. That we saw a series of Brachiosaurus footprints, Allosaurus footprints from 135 million years ago, all alongside each other. And you could actually track a whole group of brachiosaurs by their footprints, which is, for somebody like me who's an absolute dinosaur buff, is amazing. They've only found these in my lifetime. I remember when I was a kid, I was really disappointed because we'd always, being a dinosaur buff, all the dinosaurs you'd read about were either in the Gobi Desert or in USA. So it's become very exciting to know that we're now becoming one of the centres for dinosaur research. But of course, as usual, they're very remote. But that's a fantastic tour. If you've got any family, particularly kids, who've got an interest, and I've got an interest, not being a kid, in dinosaurs. It is just amazing to see these footprints, and it's such a beautiful setting. Ganthown Point's another spot that I'd recommend in Broome, and it's a very rocky, red, scarlet-type cliffs. Again, looking over the water, we saw three humpbacks over these beautiful cliffs, and it's a beautiful area just to walk and wade through the rock pools. Beautiful place again to watch the sunset, very close to Cable Beach. Also, Sun Pictures is worth going to. It's an outdoor cinema. I've discovered it's the world's oldest operating picture theatre that's outside. It's been running continuously since 1916. Very fun. The weather is very balmy, so it's a lot of fun to watch a new movie and have a few beers there while you're watching the screen. And while we're talking about breweries and drinking, there's a very nice brewery there called Matzo's, which has been around for many, many years, long before microbreweries were really in. They've been there for, I think they've been about 70 years, and their own normal beers are fantastic, but they've also got chili mango, which was fantastic, a really nice beer. It tastes a lot better than it sounds, and an alcoholic ginger beer from Fresh Ginger, which was really nice as well. And a really good place to eat. Very tropical, beautiful place just to sit and enjoy the atmosphere with all the other people at the brewery there. The one last thing in Broome that we did that was probably our biggest highlight, we took a cruise out from Cable Beach, out into the ocean there, not far out, to see the humpbacks. And we saw many mothers with calves. It's a place they come to rest. Many humpbacks with calves. I lost count of how many of them. Some of them were literally alongside our boat, which gives you a much greater perspective of how big they are.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was just stunning. We saw one breach, not many breach, because it wasn't this sort of, we got told it's not their season to breach, but many of them were just more inquisitive of us rather than the other way around, and they came right up to the boat. We're also lucky to see a tiger shark, which was fascinating to see. And yeah, you think tiger sharks are big until you see one swim alongside a humpback, which is what we saw, and you realize they look so small up against humpbacks. And we saw so many sea snakes. Evidently they were mating. We saw them entwining amongst each other, a beautiful sea snakes as well. And we saw rare snub-nosed dolphins, which are very rare, some of the rarest dolphins on earth. And so they've literally, it looks like your standard bottlenose dolphins, which we see regularly, but with their nose cut off. It's a very funny shape looking dolphin. Very rare, very beautiful, quite a bit smaller than your bottlenose and your standard, your porpoises as well.
Right.
We got told there were dugongs there. You know dugongs, Chris?
Dugongs I do not know.
So dugongs, I think you have a very similar animal in Florida, a manatee.
Manatee, yeah. Okay.
Yes. So dugongs are the Australian. They're slightly different, but in the same family. Same thing. They got confused as mermaids. They definitely don't look like mermaids if they were mermaids.
No, you've been at sea too long when you start confusing manatees or dugongs with mermaids.
Absolutely. They're very beautiful animals. Are still on our list. Every place we go to in Queensland, Western Australia, they say they're there. We're yet to see one, but they promised they'd be there, but we saw everything else but that. And look, it was a really good tour. And I'd say, look, for anybody who's interested in wildlife, it's definitely worth going out on the water there. It's a fantastic trip to see all the marine wildlife there. The last thing we did before we went on our road trip, and I'd say is one of the highlights of the Kimberley region, is we took a day trip to Horizontal Falls. They're called Horizontal Falls. They are really, in actual fact, related to the tidal change. The tides in the Kimberley are the second strongest in the world. I think the strongest is the Bay of Fundy in Canada.
Meaning the total distance between high tide and low tide.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the difference in the horizontal four regions, 11 meters, so about 35 feet.
That is huge.
Yeah, it is huge. Okay. And you really get to see that in action, which is the amazing thing. And it's such a beautiful setting too. So we basically went on a four-wheel drive, firstly, up to Cape Levesque from the Broome, which is on what they call the Dampier Peninsula, which is a beautiful area in itself and well worth some extra time if you wanted to. We had breakfast there and we stayed in an Aboriginal community called the Badi Jawi people, and they've got a resort there which they look after absolutely beautifully. And Cape Levesque is just, again, red cliffs, white sand, azure seas, beautiful place just to have your breakfast. And then we went out from there and caught a seaplane and went over the Buccaneer Archipelago, which is a whole series of islands. The Kimberley is not just a landmass, it's got thousands upon thousands of mountainous islands, which are just beautiful in themselves. Many cruisers go through there, small cruisers. And we landed in an area called Talbot Bay in the ocean. And again, surrounded by fairly significant mountains, beautiful coloured water. You're on a large pontoon when your seaplane lands. They cook you a beautiful lunch of barramundi, which is a very classic Northern Australian fish, beautiful fish that they catch there. They also have a series of resident tawny nurse sharks, which are like grey nurse sharks, okay. As well as bull sharks, which are people, I don't know if they are in USA, but one of the most dangerous sharks on Earth in terms of attacks. They're in the same family as the great whites.
Which is why they're in Australia. Okay.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, we have plenty of different ones. And the bulls, we don't get in the south where I live. We get the great whites. But up there, they've got the bulls up and tigers up there. Tawny nurse sharks, they tell us, are relatively harmless, but they were pretty big. They would have been about 3.5 meters, so 10 foot long. The bulls were probably about the same size, but were about twice as thick. They were like a big truck. That you can just see them all around the pontoon because the water's so clear. You can actually go down in the water in a cage with them, which we did, and it was a lot of fun. We were hand-feeding the sharks. The tawnies, they said if you see the bull coming, do not put your hands out there.
Hand-feeding would take on a whole new meaning.
Absolutely. It's amazing to think these wild animals, they're almost like dogs the way they behave. They're all around the pontoon and obviously know it's lunchtime. But the highlight is you then get on a speedboat, much like those boats they have in New Zealand, those jet boats that go on the rivers very fast. And you go through all these beautiful creeks and arms of the ocean there. It's beautiful. And then you go to the horizontal falls themselves, which is the whole purpose of the trip. And as I said, you know, 35-meter a tidal change. And the water flows at 30 knots. So it is like going through a rapids in the ocean. And you're going through these gaps in the cliffs. Some of the gaps, one of the gaps particularly where it's at the strongest, is only 30 feet apart, these probably 100 meters, 200 meter cliffs on each side. And the boat goes through, there is very little space on either side while you're traveling at 30 knots. We're going gates at 30 knots, and it feels like you're climbing up a ladder. That's probably the best way I can describe it. The height difference, that's why they call it the horizontal falls, it's like a waterfall in reverse, is about 12, 15 feet. So when you're going up it, it looks like you're going up a ramp of water. Huh. Coming down, it's quite a lot of fun because you're going very fast down. So when you go over it, it's bang, you hit the water and go through these very small gaps. We had a crazy Irishman who was the boat captain. He was a lot of fun, but he said we enjoyed it so much. He took us up and down this narrow gap about 10 times. He said most people only cope with it once because they're so scared. But there haven't been any accidents with this company, but they have had, and they've been banned. They've had two companies go through and the captains weren't so experienced, and unfortunately there have been deaths because it is very, very narrow. We could have touched the sides of the cliffs with our hands. So it was a lot of fun. You just closed your eyes and just prayed, and then we got through it. But it's a lot of fun, and it was one of the most unique experiences I could say I've ever done in my life, was going on this almost rapid in the ocean. So the rest of the travel in the Kimberley for us was actually the famous Gibb River Road. Why the Kimberley is famous is for its remoteness, its waterfalls, the Bungle Bungle Range, which I'll talk about, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it's so few people there. When we were there, it was very busy. It was July, which was school holidays. And Western Australia and South Australia are the only two states that have had very little COVID. And so we're the only states that have been open. So we're allowed to travel to Western Australia and vice versa. So as a result, Western Australians who would often used to go to Bali, because Bali is just as close as the Kimberley, they would go there, but now there's no other option. So we found it extremely busy. Evidently, it's a lot busier than it is normally. But as I said, if you are going to do the Gibb River Road, it's 700 kilometres of corrugation. And I've been on roads up in the Flinders Ranges in South Australia where it's corrugation for a kilometre. 700 kilometres, which is what, 400 miles or so, it's pretty intense. And we saw very good four-wheel drives, Land Cruisers, Jeeps, which had been completely destroyed, their axles along the way. I'd say we saw about a dozen very good, expensive, recent four-wheel drives that didn't survive this road, along the road. So hence why I say, look, you need to be an experienced driver. If you are, it's great. If not, I'd recommend a tour, which is what we did. We didn't want to have to think about it.
Well, and one thing to clarify here, to make sure that I'm on the same page as you, when you describe them as being corrugated, this isn't something that they did intentionally, that the road is all bumps, but this is, we would call it washboarding, is the other thing, that it's basically just every foot there's a bump.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Is that what it's called there? Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know that we have a term, but when I looked it up, washboarding was the, or corrugation are the two terms that are used for it. Yeah. Very rough road.
Yeah, it is very rough and very mountainous. You're going, as I said before, we actually did a count. We recorded every time we saw a dead cow because sadly there's a lot of cattle stations up there and a lot of without fences. So we counted the number of dead cows. We marked it on the bus window. Thankfully, there was only 7 or 10. I think 7 to 10 we saw, but we did do 80 river crossings. Some of the river crossings, actually the water got into the bus. It was that deep. So you really need to know what you're doing, as I said. And some of the rivers, particularly the tidal rivers, do have saltwater crocodiles. There's two types of crocodiles you see in the Kimberley. There's the saltwaters, which are man-eaters,
yep,
and can get to 20 feet long. Then there's the freshwater crocodiles, which are not just because they live in freshwater. They're a completely different species.
Right.
Their nose is much more elongated and really just designed to catch fish. But up there, I've seen them in the East Coast, in Queensland and in Northern Territory, and they're little. They're only, well, little by crocodile terms. They're only about 6 feet. But the ones up there, we saw some. The National Park guide said in one place they can get up to 12, 15 feet. And we saw some that would have been at least 10 feet. But he said they're harmless. The only thing they've ever done is taken a few arms of German tourists. For some reason, German tourists, they seem to have a passion for. And the reason is because the Germans don't read the signs and go in the water. We did swim with some freshwater crocodiles and we were assured that they wouldn't hurt us. Yeah, we survived to tell the story, but you would never swim with a saltwater crocodile, that's for sure. Beautiful looking animals though, the freshies. There are a lot, as we call them salties and freshies. The freshies are very nice. If you can call a crocodile cute, they are cute by crocodile terms anyway. But this Gibb River Road starts in Broome and finishes on the Northern Territory border. So Broome's on the northwest side and it goes from west to east. Yeah, there is a bitumen road, a normal road called the Great Northern Highway.
And bitumen and so, asphalt, for those who are not speaking Australian English. Yep.
And ironically, that was the only place where we had a flat tire. We went through all this road and had nothing, and then we came back on the asphalt. And,
you can say bitumen, that's all right.
Oh, that's right. We say asphalt occasionally too. We had a flat tire there in the middle of nowhere. But it is an amazing road. You'll see scenery that is quite epic in its nature. It's some of the oldest rock on earth, and I mentioned in the South Australian tour, again, these are from 600 million years old, this rock, and it's the colors in the rock it's just spectacular. There's oranges, there's scarlet, there's yellows, there's white rock, as well as the color of the water, whether it's the rivers or the sea. The rivers are so clear, the water is so pure. It's that beautiful tropical blue that really only tropical water brings, and waterfalls. And as I said, you'll go from baobab trees, which baobab trees grow either in Madagascar or in the Kimberley and South Africa. But the Kimberley has also got its own unique baobab trees. So you'll see baobab trees and eucalyptus trees in the drier areas. And then you get down to where the large rivers, some of these rivers are massive, being tropical. And suddenly it changes to the rainforest, ferns, large palm trees, Livingstonia palms, which came from this area and are now in a lot of people's pot plants in there around Australia and America. But it's an amazing transformation when you get to the rivers and you've got this color of the water with the palms and the beautiful rock. It's certainly quite a unique setting, and we swam in so many waterfalls. I'll talk about a couple of them briefly, but to be able to swim in this clearest of clear water when it's warm and swimming right into the waterfalls, it's quite special.
Well, and one question before we go too much further, you mentioned you could do this in a 4x4 if you were very experienced, or you could do a bus tour. Did the bus tour, and who did you go with?
We did a lot of research on TripAdvisor and asked for a lot of advice, and we ended up choosing one that I think was fantastic called Adventure Wild.
Okay.
Adventure Wild were fantastic. Based in Broome, they picked us up from our Airbnb and dropped us off back at our Airbnb at the end of the tour, which went for 10 days. It was absolutely amazing. And really, I know a lot of your trips involved a week. To be honest, you would only be able to do the asphalt road in a week, and you'd okay. miss a lot of these waterfalls because it's up further north on the Gibb Road where you get access to these remote waterfalls that are just epic in their nature. And I'd say, look, if you're going to make the effort to come to Western Australia, because it's a long way away from the US, for example, right. or from Europe, it's worth spending an extra bit of time. And I would say out of everywhere in Western Australia, it's hard to beat the Kimberley. The Kimberley is such a unique place, and it's so little visited by anybody other than a few Australians. Eventually, people tell me that they see a few Europeans, but it's very rare. And the people who do go there say it is like nowhere else on earth, because it's not just the scenery, it's the history. You really are can interact with Indigenous people. There's Indigenous rock art, 50, 60,000 years old, everywhere too. So, and we came home with some beautiful Indigenous art. The artists up there are quite world famous for their work and very well prized. And you can buy it direct from the Aboriginal artists, which is nice to know that they're getting all the money.
Right.
And some of that art we bought here is people, when they see it in our house, are just mind blown by how beautiful it is too. So it is a really great experience to really see Australia as I think a lot of people would see. It's very much like Crocodile Dundee country, but it's without crocodile. And it is wild, remote and rugged. And the people up there typify that it is wild, remote, and rugged. I haven't been to Alaska, but I imagine it's like how the Alaskans are. The people up there are unique. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun too, but you have to be crafty. You have to be hardy, because there's very little support. You have to be very self-sufficient. But I would highly recommend Adventure Wild. I know some of the other tours were there and their trucks consistently broke down, and they said, yeah, this wasn't uncommon. And that, in fact, Adventure Wild often had to help the others repair their trucks. We camped, but we stayed in permanent campsites.
Okay.
And the campsites are just absolutely spectacular, always by rivers, beautiful places. All the food was, because there's no towns.
Right.
Other than Broome and Kununurra, where it ends on the other side, you really are having to be self-sufficient. So you need to bring all your supplies. Every night they would have a campfire. And the stars up there at night were just, it's one of the darkest areas in the world because there's so few people. Mm-hmm. So the stars are just fantastic. So really, daytime, you've got the beautiful scenery, the hikes, the waterfalls. Nighttime, you have the beautiful nights. And the campsites were beautiful. So I'd definitely highly recommend Adventure Wild. In terms of things you'd see along this tour, I'll talk about some real highlights. Tunnel Creek is one of the absolute favourites and was done on our first day. Tunnel Creek's part of the Devonian reef system. All the western part of the Kimberley was basically part of the Devonian age period where there was a massive coral reef.
Okay.
And there are now canyons or gorges which have been created basically from the reefs. Tunnel Creek is part of that system. So Tunnel Creek, you're basically walking into a cave, but the cave is very high. The cave system's probably about 100 feet high. There's a creek running through there which you have to wade through at times and even swim through at times. So you do have to be a swimmer. But you're swimming and walking with headlights, lamps on. At times it opens up and you've got daylight, at other times it's not. It's like a cathedral size creek system that goes for a whole kilometre in the dark with stalactites around you, evenly freshwater crocodiles in the dark. We heard a couple splash, but we didn't see any, but you wouldn't know anyway. You're walking sometimes on land and other times in the water, but we had people on our tour who are in their mid-80s who navigated it. So as long as you can swim, it wasn't hard, and it was only you'd swim for 20 feet, then you'd be on land, then you'd swim again. It was a lot of fun, with headlights, stalactites, and a running creek through it. Absolutely beautiful. And you come out at the end to this billabong. Billabongs are like, sure. I'm not sure.
Waterhole.
Not sure what, waterhole. At the end with stringy bark trees overhanging the billabong with the sun setting on it. It was a beautiful place.
And the only reason I know that a billabong is a watering hole is Waltzing Matilda.
Absolutely. We finished off at that day in the Devonian system at Winjana Gorge, which is an Aboriginal name. And Winjana was very high red cliffs. We were there at the sunset. So we were watching the sunset over these red cliffs reflecting in the creek there. And there were a number of crocodiles there, large crocodiles. It's not a place you swim because, unlike Tunnel Creek, which has one or two resident freshwater crocodiles, Winjana, we counted 15. in half a kilometre. And one of them in particular was not happy having his photographs taken. He was slapping his tail and was making a horrible sound, which I haven't heard before, that they sounded as scary as they looked. But great for photography. Absolutely beautiful place. We're keeping on heading east. You'll find we went to probably three or four canyons, gorges, Bell Gorge, Galvin Gorge, Manning Gorge, which again, beautiful places because again, you're swimming in these gorges. All of them have waterfalls, quite spectacular waterfalls. Some of them would probably be up to 100 feet high. Ancient rock art, nearly every one of these waterfalls, there was rock art that you could actually see on the walks through. So you do have to be fit. A lot of the walks were not challenging, I'd say moderate. But the end result is when you get to these places, you've got these beautiful natural swimming pools with waterfalls and some of the most beautiful swimming that I've ever done in my life. As we keep heading east, El Cuestro Station. It was named El Cuestro. It was, again, another large beef station, and it sounds more, I guess, Northern American, and they named this because they thought it sounded really cool. That's basically the story. Now, unlike a lot of the other names, which are very Aboriginal, the owners decided El Cuestro sounded very cool. And we camped at El Cuestro, but it's one of those places that's got camping, but also on top of a cliff, it has an old homestead from the 19th century, which has been converted to some of the most expensive accommodation in Australia. Hmm. You don't get to see those people. They have their own thing. But it's one of those things, and even though Kimberley is very rough and rugged, there are evidently there's quite a few places like that along there that you can actually stay at the high end. And that's the nice thing, right through there to camping. But the camping's always well set up. There's always good showers. There's always good toilets. There's always free barbecue areas that you can cook barbecues on. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, a lot of the campsites were in such spectacular locations that I would have felt I would have missed out if I was put in a more homogenized place. I think part of the thrill was actually being in these sort of campsites with the most spectacular settings. And El Cuestro is probably the most popular spot along the Gibb River Road because of its scenery. It's got rivers large enough to have cruises on them, river cruises.
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't do because what we did was, again, one of our highlights. We flew, again, the distances are massive, to a place called Mitchell Falls, which out of all the waterfalls in the Kimberley is probably the most famous and I think the most beautiful. Mitchell Falls, you fly on a small plane, it took us about an hour from El Cuestro, right near the ocean, so slightly north, and then you do about a three-hour walk. And I couldn't believe it was 3 hours because we went past all these different waterfalls along the way. And also, again, they showed you all this beautiful indigenous rock art. But then the highlight is at the end where you walk through and we had lunch there. And we sat having lunch in front of Mitchell Falls, which I think I sent you a couple of photos of, Chris. But Mitchell Falls is a series of four vertical waterfalls. We just sat there having lunch. And it's hard to beat that as a waterfall. It had four waterfalls. The last one in particular is really high. You're in this massive river with this gorge running through it with four cascading falls, one after the other. Some of the most beautiful scenery. And to finish off with, it wasn't a cheap day, as you can imagine. Not only did we do the flight, but you actually then get in a helicopter and they fly you over it. And the helicopter takes you back to the airport when we flew back. And not a cheap day, but it was one of those things. It's really the only way you can get there. The other way you can get there, evidently, is on a cruise boat or on the ocean. And then again, they still fly you via chopper. These are high-end small boat cruisers. They fly you in by chopper to these waterfalls. They are very hard to access. You can access by road, but you are driving off the Gibb River Road onto even worse road, and it will take you 8 hours to get there. So it gives you an idea of the distance. It's pretty significant. We also went to a couple of other gorges at El Cuestro, one called Emma and one called El Cuestro. Again, beautiful red rock like I keep talking about. The favourite one of all was Emma Gorge. Emma Gorge, you do a reasonably hard walk along the creek in this very narrow canyon, and you end up coming to this waterfall, which is, again, in a very high waterfall, and the natural swimming pool that the waterfall feeds into is almost like a natural amphitheater. It's a semicircle of towering cliffs, and sitting there lying on your back watching the waterfall cascade in front of you was just absolutely beautiful. And all the sides of the cliffs, which are bright orange, also covered in these ferns because it's so wet through there. So a beautiful place, one of my favorites. On our last day in El Cuesta station, as we started heading east, we went to Zebedee Hot Springs, and I'd recommend that. The hot springs, again, in these cliff areas that I was talking about, the water sits at about a comfortable 32 degrees. Huh. And they actually, there's tropical palms that grow in amongst the hot springs. So you're lying on your back in these hot springs and you're surrounded by palm trees. You'd swear it was actually artificial, but it's all obviously natural. Costs nothing to get in. A beautiful place to visit.
When you say hot springs, they're really kind of warm springs at that temperature. You're talking a little less than body temperature.
Yeah, probably. Although where we were, mm-hmm. which was at the bottom end of them, and they're running water, that's like a running creek you're going through. That was about 32. They did say as you got further up, the water gets up to about 40 degrees.
Okay.
And there was a whole series of them. We chose the first one because they said the first one was busy. But when we got there, which was very early morning, all the people had moved up further because it was still quite cool. So we were quite fine for it to be 32 degrees, but a couple of the people who were on our tour said they went up further and they were told by somebody there that the temperatures there were about 40. So you can pick the temperature you prefer.
Okay.
And to be honest, 40 degrees, so that's about, what, over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, when it's perhaps 90 Fahrenheit, it's probably not so pleasant, but it was morning, so actually it was still pleasant. The 32 was still pleasant.
Got it.
So we then... There's a whole lot here I'm missing, but the scenery is spectacular the whole way. But you finish off in the next largest town. It's the only real town between Broome and the border of Northern Territory called Kununurra, which is an Aboriginal place. Kununurra is situated on a large natural lake, and it's also very close to Lake Argyle. Lake Argyle's one of the large, I think it's the second largest reservoir in Australia. And it was used for farming, but it's in itself has become beautiful. So it was only built before my lifetime, but it was only built not that long ago. It was for hydroelectric power as well. It's now one of the biggest bodies of water in Australia, surrounded by this mountain range as well. Beautiful place. And we took a cruise on that, had a fantastic time enjoying the mountain scenery with the water again. Saw lots of crocodiles, rock wallabies, which were beautiful, jabiroos, which are a beautiful, rare Northern Australian stork with a very bright, iridescent blue beak. Fantastic wildlife as well as just stunning scenery. You'll also, when you come into the Lake Argyle resort area from Kununurra, there's a resort there, and they call it a resort. It's really just basically a caravan park, but a very nice one, and had an infinity pool which was on the edge of a cliff looking out over Lake Argyle with these red orange cliffs. It would definitely be one of the most spectacular infinity pool locations that you could ever see. Very nice place to stay as well. To come back to Kununurra, we then left the Lake Argyle and went on the Ord River, which is on the bottom end of it where it's no longer dammed. And the Ord River is one of the largest rivers in Northern Australia. It's navigable. We were on a boat that took about 30 of us, went down there. It was 55 kilometres back to Kununurra. Again, you're following a very deep canyon in the, again, with that beautiful water. We saw lots of wildlife. Again, by this stage, you've seen so many crocodiles, but we also saw absolutely beautiful white-bellied sea eagles, which are one of the largest eagles in Australia, and saw whole groups of those just sitting on the treetops, obviously looking for their lunch, which is the fish. Fantastic place. And in fact, we had an Alaskan captain. She thought she'd go from one remote place, as she said. She came from a very remote place in northern Alaska that she said you can only access very occasionally, and decided what could be more remote. So she ended up in the Kimberley. And she said it felt like Alaska was actually less remote than where she was, but she was a lot of fun. And it's a fantastic trip. Again, it's a whole day from Kununurra going up to Lake Argyle and back on the Ord River, but I'd thoroughly recommend it. The final day on the Gibb Road was probably, along with the Mitchell Falls, my favourite, and that's the Bungle Bungles. Bungle Bungles are an interesting story there. The Aboriginal name for the national park is called Purnalulu, but I guess the anglicised version is Bungle Bungles. very different, and I'm not sure where their name came from. But the most unusual thing is they were found in the 19th century and they were disregarded. Nobody took much notice of them. They were only discovered again in 1985.
Huh.
And we're talking of a massive mountain range. It's 3,000 square kilometres of mountains that were only discovered in my lifetime, which still blows me away that a place had not really been found and now it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Got it.
Sent you some photos, but if you looked at the photos, it's one of the most unique mountain ranges I think I've ever seen. It's this cone-shaped karst formation, and they're like beehives, and they're quite largish mountains. Some of them get up to 2,000 feet.
With real obvious striations also.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got this ochre and black stripes, which are really, I can see why it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, because in all my travels, there isn't anything quite like it to explain. But amongst all these karst formations, too, are spectacular gorges you can walk through into. We did a couple of them.
Mm.
And there's three things I'd recommend if you're there. You can stay there for days. People, in fact, hike into those for days on end, but you have to be very self-sufficient to do that because the creeks in winter, or in the wet season more like, are very strong and very large. And when we were there, they were basically dry except for a few water holes. The three things I would definitely do if your time is short. If your time is completely short, again, this is sounds like a very decadent trip. We did another helicopter.
Well, it's not a budget trip. We should say that in case people haven't figured that out already.
No, it's not a budget trip, and it's one that we've left to this time of our life for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wouldn't say you're not staying in luxury.
Right.
Anytime it involves choppers, and choppers do give you access that you wouldn't get otherwise, but choppers around the world are, I've never been on a cheap chopper flight, and these aren't any cheaper. But it is one of those things that is, to get an idea of how large it is and how spectacular it is, getting on a chopper and going over those 3,000 square meters and at such a low height is just spectacular. We were going through the canyons, we were going through over these honeycomb-shaped formations. You just get an idea of its vastness. And when I see that, I still can't imagine how it was lost for 100 years and was really only discovered in the mid-80s. When you see the size of this thing, you think, how did it get missed? But it's only when you realize how remote it is do you realize that.
Right.
The other two things that I'd say to do is to do some walks. The two that we did quite a few, but two stood out. And one of them was probably one of the most beautiful walks I've ever done. And it wasn't hard. So you really could be at any age and do it. And we had people from their 30s right through to their 80s. And even the 80-year-olds did it. Cathedral Gorge. Cathedral Gorge is called that because it is like walking into a cathedral. At the end of the gorge is a circular, bright red, massive mountain, which at the base of it is pure white sand, like a beach sand and a water hole. Some of the best acoustics, natural acoustics you'll ever find. My wife got me to sing. I used to think I was okay as a singer until I realized my band, nobody wanted to listen to me, but I ended up singing there. But I do know they have sent orchestras up there and performed, which would be amazing. And its size of it is vast, this gorge where you end up walking in. The walk's beautiful, but when you get to this area where the acoustics are, just to have a real orchestra in there would be just something else. It's a very sacred area to the Aboriginal people, but luckily they let us into these places. And there's a very high respect up there. I had, in all the places I've mentioned, not once did I see any graffiti.
That wasn't done tens of thousands of years ago, you mean?
No, that's right. That might be, but yeah, there's nothing new, thankfully, from us.
Yeah.
But it is a fantastic place to visit. The other end of the national park is echidna, like the echidna, the spiny anteater, chasm, which is, having been in Utah years ago, it's very much like some of your, are they called slot canyons?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so very, like you could actually touch the sides of the walls with your hands, both sides. Again, this orange and red with palm trees. Then you go into these very narrow chasm, very high cliffs on either side, very, very trippy place, absolutely beautiful. It was one of the a great way for FET to end the Gariva Road. And I would highly recommend that area. Even if you can't do the Gariva Road, you can actually come from underneath on the Great Northern Highway. Mm-hmm. And there are some campsites on the asphalt you can stay and you can do tours to the Bungle Bungles. So if you decided you weren't going to do a tour or you didn't want to take the risk on a four-wheel drive, you could do the highways and then go in on organised day tours to the Bungle Bungles. It is one of those places I don't think you'll see anywhere else on earth. It's completely unique mountain range and it's absolutely beautiful. So we then headed back to Broome on the Great Northern Highway, which connects Darwin, the capital of Northern Territory, mm-hmm. to Perth eventually. It is bitumen. And there's a couple of really nice spots along the way. It would take you a good day and a half of driving to get back. The distances are epic. Halls Creek is probably the largest town along there. It's 1,600 people. It's an primarily Indigenous population. That is where we got our Indigenous art. And there are lots of other places along the way, but I'd highly recommend Halls Creek because they had some fantastic galleries, what I considered well-priced. None of it's cheap, but when you consider this as an individual spending weeks on end to paint it, it's not expensive, I think, for what it is. Mm-hmm. But if anybody wants to take home a souvenir, you wouldn't get a better souvenir than some of the Indigenous art that's available at Halls Creek. There was also good stuff at Kununurra, but we found it was all of the owners of the art galleries were not locals, whereas at Halls Creek, all of the owners were local Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And they also had all true validations and they give you information to prove that it was done by this artist. And you felt like you're actually putting money back into the community a lot more.
Right.
The last place that I'd say is absolute must is Geeky Gorge, which was heading backward. Another great name. Geeky is managed by the local Aboriginal people and they do an incredible job of managing it. It's large enough, the gorge there, that the river, that you can actually go on a cruise. And we did a morning cruise on the river. And the cliffs there are quite different. They're, again, that Devonian reef system, but they are the creams and browns. Again, beautiful, very different sort of scenery to the rest of the Kimberley. And which is what makes it so beautiful to go on. And it's a beautiful cruise and it's a nice way to finish off the trip. And then you head back to Broome. So that trip sounds short, but that takes you probably about 10 days to do. And I've really tried to give the highlights. There are so many other little highlights. One thing that stood out for me, and it was one of the most beautiful settings, El Cresto Station, we went up to a lookout called Pigeon Hole. I'm not sure why it's called Pigeon Hole Lookout, which is on the top of a mountain. And we saw the sunset over two rivers, which were sort of had bends in them, like U-shaped bends. Mm-hmm. So you're watching the sunset over two different rivers with these beautiful mountains, bright red all around you. And we watched the sunset over that as we were. One of the tour guides was reciting Australian poetry and we were drinking Australian red wine. It was one of those unique experiences and one of the most beautiful settings. And unless you know these places, mm-hmm. you wouldn't know to find. That's the other thing. If you do drive, you'd really want to get a lot of good information because the signposting's not great. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the most spectacular scenes to watch the sunset that I've ever seen. And those sort of things are quite memorable. So there were lots of these little moments that, as well as the big ticket items that I've mentioned, that just adds so much to the experience. And I look back and say, look, I've traveled a lot of places around the world. The Kimberley is such a unique place and it really does feel like you are in the wilderness. You really do feel like you're out back. And it is one of those unique places that I think if you get the chance and you do have the money, as you said, Chris, yes, it's not budget, but you can camp and you can avoid the helicopters. So you don't have to be filthy rich. We're not, but we decided we hadn't had any travel because of COVID. And we thought this is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And some of those places, you just, without the helicopter, you wouldn't get the same experience. And we figured we're probably not going to go back there again. So, hey, let's do it. So that's probably in a nutshell. You'll come back to Broome. And then if that's your trip, I think you would have had one of the best trips. But obviously, you then combine it with you will have to fly
right
either to Darwin, Perth, and then you can combine that with a trip to the Northern Territory or Southern Western Australia, which are all beautiful places themselves.
And we have separate episodes on Darwin and Perth both, and some other things in Western Australia that you can check out in the show notes. One thing to clarify, because I did not know this, when I said that a billabong was a watering hole, that is correct, but it is incomplete. It is what we would call an oxbow lake. So it's an isolated pond left behind after a river changes course, which I there did not go. Know. That part I did not learn from my fifth grade music teacher who taught us Waltzing Matilda. So
yeah. Oh, there you are. And that would be a more accurate description. It's funny because as an Australian, you just say billabong and you know what it is without actually the explanation. But right. That is exactly what it is. And look, many of the campsites are by billabong, so you really do. We were singing Waltzing Matilda at times by the fire, because it really does echo that sort of. It's such a famous song for Australians, and right. It really do feel like that. You're sitting under the gum trees with no sheep, though. The gum trees with the billabong. We would go for a swim nearly every night in the billabong, and then come up and have a barbecue with cooked steaks on the barbecue. You're watching the stars in the sky. It was said that's the best thing about the whole trip was not just the activities but just sitting by the fires with those beautiful settings and watching the sunset over these billabongs and then the sky turning dark and just seeing stars that you didn't realize how many stars existed until you go a place like here or like I described in my last one in the Flinders Ranges. That it's just an epic landscape at night too.
Excellent. Well, and if people don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about Waltzing Matilda. It is sometimes called the unofficial national anthem of Australia. And you can look it up. We'll put a link to the show notes to the lyrics to Waltzing Matilda.
It's funny because just very quickly, we're in Kathmandu on a holiday when I went to Everest Base Camp. And we went on a Momo cooking class, which are like dumplings in Nepal. And this man who was teaching us Momos, he and his wife came out with a guitar because they knew we were Australians. And I never knew this was – other people knew our song. They started singing Waltzing Matilda. So amongst us eating Momos and drinking his homemade reiki, we were singing Waltzing Matilda in a house, a private home in Kathmandu, which was quite surreal. that a Nepalese family would have never knew Waltzing Matilda. But you forget that it is sort of, you said it's our sort of unofficial anthem, and it's so spot on. I think a lot of people recognize that more for Australia than our actual anthem.
I don't think I would recognize your national anthem, actually.
We don't much either. Yeah. We do love Waltzing Matilda, that's for sure.
Excellent. Well, we're going to wrap this up here, and you know what I'm going to ask next is, of all of those places we've talked about, if I say you're standing in the prettiest spot.
Yeah, that is hard. I did really have to think long and hard, because there are so many. I'll give a second mention was Cathedral Gorge at the end.
That was what I was thinking from the pictures I was looking at. Okay. Yeah.
But I do think, as much as that is unique and quite, again, I keep using the word epic, but that is how the scenery is. I can't go past where we sat and had our lunch at Mitchell Falls. We sat and had lunch and looked across this amazing canyon with four cascading waterfalls, one after the other. That probably is going to stick in my mind. And I thought about what sticks in my mind when you're going to ask me that. That stuck in my mind is probably one of the most amazing places I've ever seen in my life, just to see four picture-perfect waterfalls, one after the other. Yeah, I think that would be it, Mitchell Falls.
And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only in the Kimberley.
Everybody says it's okay to swim with crocs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I give you that.
We never got quite used to it. I only saw them once when I was swimming. Just on that, on a serious note, you are up high enough and you do need to do your research. You do need to ask. If other people are swimming there, you're safe usually. You do need to find out if they're fresh water, because fresh waters do not kill people. But there are parts of the Kimberley much closer to the ocean, and many of the rivers are tidal, and saltwater crocodiles are in the Kimberley as well. So do make sure you know whether it's safe to swim, because there are regularly, every year, people are taken by saltwater crocodiles in the Kimberley and in Northern Territory. So as much as I'm saying the rivers are beautiful to swim in, pick the right river, do your research. And if you do see signs, which has got a crocodile on it, and they now have German writing, like Achtung Krokodiere, because people don't follow the signs. And if you do go, you are putting yourself at massive risk. These are not great whites. The aunts, people get nervous about being with sharks in Australia, but it's so rare to be taken by a shark.
Right.
But crocodiles, we are on their food chain. And the salties are dangerous. But it's quite funny when they say, it's just freshies. And you look over and you can see a freshie in the sun, basking in the sun, and it's 10 foot long. You've got one eye on swimming, one eye on that crocodile, which has got its mouth wide open, purely because it's actually trying to release some heat, evidently. But it does look quite threatening when you see a mouth full of teeth, only about 20, 30 feet from you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, no, when you were crossing the rivers, even, I thought of the river crossings we did in Africa. And every time we crossed a river, I was very aware that there were crocodiles in the area. It's like, is this a good idea?
You don't want to swim in Nile crocodiles either, do you?
Well, this was further south, the sub-Saharan, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And if you had to summarize the Kimberley and Western Australia in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
I thought about this one and I ended up with three W's, not for any reason, but I thought that was just how it came out.
Well, I appreciate the extra work that gets the alliteration here. So,
thanks. So definitely wilderness, waterfalls, and wow.
Excellent.
I lost count of how many times we just looked at what we were looking at and we just, all of us would just, our jaws would drop and we would just say, wow.
If you haven't noticed, when I start the show and talk about what we're going to do, I go for alliteration. So I appreciate the extra work that went in here.
Thanks, Chris.
So James won't necessarily be back on in another month unless he goes someplace else. But thank you, James, for coming back on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Western Australia and particularly for the Kimberley.
Thanks for having me back, Chris. And I hope some people do make the effort to go there. I really appreciate you having me back to speak about a beautiful part of the world. Thank you.
Thanks, Scu. Out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in being a patron of the show, you get the show a little early, get monthly Zoom calls, and get first in line for any Amateur Traveler trips. If you're interested in learning more, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.